This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Let's take a walk. On my fourth day at the Casadega Spiritualist Camp, I take a walk around Colby Alderman Park,
sprawling affair that's now a nationally recognized historic district,
and added in the waterproof historical markers to match. Today, we're going to be talking about the decline of the Fox Sisters and one of my most significant readings at Casadega. But first, let's take a stroll through Casadega, beginning at the intersection of, and I'm not kidding, Mediumship Way and Psychic Road. I know, and I took a lot of audio as I was just wandering around this neighborhood for a consecutive week, so to give you an idea of the vibe.
There's no sidewalks here. This feels very NPR of me to do. It feels very This American Life. I feel like a fucking dork.
When you get to Casadega, you pass these white cement pillars on Casadega Road. And to your left is the Casadega Hotel, where I'm going to be staying. It's this big haunted-looking building that got rebuilt in the 20s after burning down, but has been out of the hands of the Casadega camp proper for many decades now, which, as we've discussed before, has led to a lot of confusion and drama in the community because there are readings done at the hotel, but not ones that are sanctioned by the spiritualist proper. In many ways, having this hotel bought out from under them due to their own kind of chronic brokenness is one of the hardest hits Casadega has ever taken. The hotel's really important. It shares a name with the community and has the only amenities and restaurant, which you need to know is called Sinatra's Ristorante, where karaoke nights get a little too loud for the proper mediums across the street's taste.
On the days the restaurant isn't open, you can either survive on chocolate bars from the bookstore or walk to the nearest gas station a half hour away. I opt for both of these at multiple points in my trip.
And as we've heard several times, the mediums who were trained at Casadega don't have the highest opinion of the mediums and tarot readers who work out of the hotel. Across the street is a more sanctioned area, the Andrew Jackson Davis Building, this white one-floor wooden structure that serves as both the camp's bookstore, administrative office, and activity center, where I've already been to message services and a table tipping class and sat in on a class called Healing 101 with Reverend Dr. Phil. I was not allowed to record this class, but they were very welcoming and we learned all about our chakras, an Eastern concept not originally associated with spiritualism. We love it. And I spoke to a particularly gossipy student who told me that she knew that spiritual healing wasn't a substitute for medicine, but the healers at Casadega had done more than her physical therapist ever had. Let's keep moving. As I learned from the bookstore manager, Selena Green, the bookstore is a moneymaker for the camp. It's one of the few places where the mediums can capitalize on the average tourist's interests, selling rarer spiritualist texts for the true student, but also overpriced crystals, t-shirts declaring Casadega, where Mayberry meets the Twilight Zone, two references that make it no wonder they're struggling to recruit younger members. They sell candles and magnets and those chocolate bars I was telling you about. This is where the spiritualists make good on people seeking mediumship as comfort and self-help. The walls are lined with tarot cards that their religion doesn't technically endorse. There are self-help guides, relationship manuals, guides to the phases of the moon, one local book about a boy who died of rabies. I don't know. Did not look into this further. On the other side of the pillars are non-camp sanctioned crystal shops. Stores that have prices jacked up into Los Angeles territory. These unsanctioned shops are even more low-ceilinged affairs with $10 clear quartz crystals and tarot reading rooms with walls so thin that you can hear the college girl crying about why her boyfriend won't take her back while paying $75 for a 20-minute reading. Walk down a little further and you'll hit
Sea Green's Ghost Museum, $10 for admission.
A business originally called the Casadega History Museum, but was then rebranded into a haunted house due to lack of interest in history. And my favorite, the tiny post office in Casadega, one that at every point seems to be barely holding on to its justification for existing. I walk back into the camp, down Stevens Street. You pass a few double-decker houses and apartments. A big one is called Harmony Hall. It's a 10-apartment ramshackle structure with a big sign out front. Some of the mediums live here, others just practice here. What I do know, because I know you're wondering, is that people fuck in Harmony Hall. Or at least they have fucked, because I receive roundabout word of at least two babies that have been conceived within its walls. I walk all the way up to the biggest park on this side of the camp, called Seneca Park, named for who founder George Colby claimed was his indigenous spirit guide who led him to the stolen indigenous land he bought and converted into Casadega. A likely story that we'll be unpacking next week. I try to meditate and be present, but it's hard because all I can hear is the sound of roosters in the distance. There are so many roosters at this camp. I've run out of things to explore, and I realize that I'm kind of killing time. I'm nervous because I'm about to get a reading with the Reverend Dr. Lewis,
a medium raised by mediums,
who doesn't just encourage you to record your reading, he records it for you, handing me a high-quality CD-ROM upon payment. Do you know what I had to go through so that you could hear this audio?
You've been to me before?
No.
Okay. If there's something you understand the reading, just stop me.
Okay.
I want you to get the most out of the reading. I do tape it for you.
Oh, great.
CD for you.
Thank you so much.
It's time. We've got to talk to Reverend Dr. Lewis. I'm going in. So this week, not only am I going to give you a look and a listen to what a one-on-one spiritualist reading is like, we're also going to close out the story of spiritualism's founders, the Fox Sisters, at the inflection point where the ideas they popularized belonged to the world and no longer to themselves. How are you feeling? I feel like we should get a theme song going. Okay, it's starting. Welcome back, listener. We have so much to discuss. In our last episode, we took a little detour to speak with the people who run Casadega today. from the mediums themselves to people who run the camp's day-to-day operations. And next week, we're going to take a look at the camp's origin story and all of the American appropriative mess that comes with it. But before we can get there, we've got to follow the story of American spiritualism's founders, the Fox sisters, Leah, Maggie, and Kate Fox, to their story's end, and take a look at how their religion didn't just outlive them, but sort of killed them too. We left off in 1852, and the Foxes, Leah, now 39, Maggie, 19, and Kate, 15, went to Philadelphia, and it was there that Maggie met a boy. And not just any boy, a 32-year-old man, and a very rich man. His name was Elisha Clark Kane, an Arctic explorer from a wealthy Philadelphia family. You know, like one of those rich guys that's like, I can have a job. But anyways, that was what he was doing. By the time he met Maggie, Kane was a successful explorer, and he took an interest in Maggie Fox, definitely not spiritualism. He asked her out and took her on a date to his brother's grave. A little weird, but I guess a good place to bring a Fox sister. And she did become pretty interested in him. Things heated up quickly, and soon enough he was professing his love for her, vowing to end his engagement that his parents were forcing him into, all while knowing that they would never approve a match with a middle-class, new-money girl with no generational assets who made her living talking to ghosts. Kane kept her a secret from his family and gave her the first of many ultimatums. Yes, he loved her, but he could only accept her as his wife if she gave up the religion that she'd founded with her sisters. Of course, Leah Fox despised him. To some extent, this was sisterly protectiveness, but it could also be seen as a power struggle between Leah and Elisha Kane to retain control over Maggie Fox's life. Kane's letters, will not endear you to him. He says things like this.
Oh, how much I wish that you would quit this life of dreary sameness and suspected deceit.
He would say to her in a series of deeply negging letters. In another, he says this.
I need hardly say that I'm gratified to find that you write so ably. You have more brain than I gave you credit for.
Just one more, I promise.
You could never lift yourself to my thoughts and my objects. I could never bring myself down to yours.
What a dreamboat. And around this time, the Fox sisters were securing some of their biggest supporters ever, including their very first president. During a trip to D.C., President Franklin Pierce and First Lady Jane Pierce saw their 11-year-old son die before their eyes when a train they were on derailed. Jane Pierce would later do a mediumship session with Maggie Fox, and the sisters also met with a number of congressmen and other D.C. locals. The religion was catching on in a huge way, in spite of charges of fraudulence and the fluctuating reputations of the sisters themselves. The next spring, Maggie's new boyfriend Kane left for another Arctic expedition, but not before Maggie gave in to his wishes and agreed to leave spiritualism and get an education according to his specifications while he was gone. Maggie's departure from the fold put extra pressure on a 16-year-old Kate Fox, who is understandably getting pretty burnt out from being worked so hard as a kid, in spite of the fact that they were making more money than ever, more than 7 times the annual salary of the average female factory worker. A few years pass as spiritualism continues to expand independently of the sisters. By this time, it was estimated that there were several hundred thousand spiritualists in the U.S., and many high-profile spiritualists were trying to get the phenomena experienced within the religion investigated and validated by petitioning Congress for a government committee. This was at a time where many spiritualists were especially enthusiastic about the scientific promise of the religion, but most government officials were still very dismissive. A former Wisconsin governor's request for a government committee was privately mocked as occult science and quickly dismissed. In 1855, the first volume of spiritualist history, called Modern Spiritualism, Its Face and Fantasies, Its Consistencies and Contradictions, was published by Eliab Capron, and it was also this year that Kane returned to Maggie Fox. Maggie was understandably thrilled. She was pretty bored, wasn't loving school, and missed conducting seances with her sisters, but she was determined to marry Alicia Clark Kane. But instead of doing that, he showed up at her home several days after getting back from his mission with a document he wanted her to sign disclaiming any relationship they'd ever had together and demanded that she return all his love letters. This motherfucker came back and said, "Just kidding. The engagement is off. Sign this NDA," like he was writing a Marvel movie or something. It makes me mad because at this point, both of them were very public figures. Kane's memoir of his most recent expedition would become a bestseller that was second only to the Bible when it was published. And Maggie Fox was the founder of this on-the-rise religious movement. But in Kane's view, she was a reputational liability. New money. So he gives her this NDA, she agrees to sign it, but he changes his mind, and Maggie forgave him for maybe one of the meanest things I've ever heard of someone you were supposed to marry doing to you. They began to see each other again, something that didn't affect his reputation, but certainly affected her as an unmarried woman who was supposed to be having sex before marriage. The Fox family was not thrilled about this, but Kate and their mother Margaret were said to be in attendance when Maggie and Kane were unofficially married in a private ceremony. It was a rushed circumstance. Kane was said to be leaving for a book tour in England the next day and allegedly said to the family,
"Maggie is my wife and I am her husband. Wherever we are, she is mine and I am hers."
This ceremony's authenticity was disputed later, and that is important because Kane became ill on the way to London and died shortly after arriving. Death of a himbo, you hate to hear it. Maggie was very upset. She fell into a nervous collapse when she learned this, and the Kane family was swift to cut her out of their bottom line, claiming that their marriage was not legitimate and any money that Kane had appeared to have left behind for her care was not intended for her at all. It's around this time that Maggie became plagued with increasing struggles with alcoholism and finances. She wrote this to Kane's brother after his passing.
"I know that the doctor must have left some message for me and know that you will not refuse to deliver it even though it gives you much pain in recalling the name of him whose memory is and ever will be sacred. I have always held a religious faith in the deep sincerity of the doctor's love."
Meanwhile, Leah and Kate struggled with a series of blows in their religion. In June of 1857, they participated in another highly publicized investigation, this one by the Boston Courier to prove the existence of spirit communication. A Harvard study on spiritualism had taken down famous spiritualist-adjacent figures, the Davenport brothers, to be nothing more than excellent magicians who could appear and disappear and create music from seemingly disembodied places. Leah and Kate prevailed in this investigation, but barely. The results of the study said that there was, quote, "a little rapping by the Foxes, easily traceable to their persons and easily done by others without the pretense of spirit, nor a table or piano lifted or anything moved a single hair's breadth. So ends this ridiculous and infamous imposture," unquote. As always, there are two sides to this. It was speculated that at least one Harvard man disliked the Fox sisters in particular because they were a friend of the deceased Alicia Kane and thought that his involvement with Maggie Fox had led to his downfall. You know how Harvard guys are, always bonding over shit that makes no sense. Maggie had managed to hold on to the only proof she had of her relationship with Kane, these love letters, and converted to Catholicism in 1858 in Kane's honor. Leah soon married a rich Quaker who was obsessed with her, good for her, which allowed her to retire from public seances after 10 years of public pressure. Suddenly, Kate Fox was the last sister standing to carry the religion on her back. And they were not going to make it easy for her. All right, we're back in Casadega to a different kind of medium carrying a different kind of spiritualism on his back. When I get to the Reverend Dr. Lewis Gates's door, I've already gotten a few readings done at the camp. The first was a tarot reading at the Hotel Casadega where I'm staying. The camp-trained mediums don't seem to have a ton of respect for the card readers at the hotel, and sure, the readings are maybe a little overpriced,
But there are Casadega mediums who charge comparably, and the rivalry itself seems kind of silly once you actually see a medium or a psychic from both parties. They're both good. And I got to see a tarot reader just inches from my hotel room, which was, for the record, tiny, haunted feeling, and a bathroom the size of a closet that I soon learned does not get hot water. Oh, and the best part, a sign that says, "Do not let cats into the hotel. Our hotel does not allow animals on the premises." And beside that sign, without fail, there were always two cats meowing at the top of their lungs, trying to get into my room from the outside. One of the better things about Casadega is it has a community stray cat feeding program called, can you figure it, Catsadega. It's called Catsadega. That is truly one of the only bridges between the camp association and their local counterparts. My tarot reader at the hotel was with a woman about my mom's age, early 60s. And like most of the psychics and mediums who work at the hotel, she has this pretty cool sweetheart deal. They get to practice upstairs in this 100-year-old haunted hotel. They're given their own hotel room to give readings in, and they get to design it as they choose. So the room I walk into is covered in pastels. There's a ton of light. And I have a tarot reading that I would say is pretty solid. It's funny to me that so many spiritualists dismiss tarot cards as strictly a parlor game. Not because it's technically incorrect, but you might recall the séance was considered a parlor game for many years. And many spiritualists used early versions of the talking board, which would become the Ouija board, which was also a parlor game. The modern spiritualist movement's relationship with tarot cards is kind of interesting to me. At the camp formally, it is not something that is used or done and seems to even be kind of looked down on by some mediums. My theory of why they no longer tend to appear in modern spiritualism, which is much more focused on the mental, is because of how many tools were proven to be fraudulent in their era. But it's a good reading. The tarot reader pulls cards and asks me about myself and interprets what's happening. She pulls the World card. She pulls the Three of Swords, the Four of Swords, a need to rest after getting stabbed in the heart three times. And like any good reading experience, some of it is just weird. She says things like this.
Spirit wants you to hear. Living in the past makes you dead in the present. That was, by Bill Belichick, the football coach.
I also got a reading done with a formal Casadega medium. Before I go see Louis Gates, I meet with a former Wall Street employee who moved to Casadega after 9/11. She has me sanitize my hands and the pen and the pad of paper she gave me to take notes. No recording allowed. And the reading is hit and miss, like many readings are. I don't think I'm going to be a fashion designer. I wear like three shirts and one pants. But she does channel my grandmother incredibly well, giving specific details down to the red scarf that she'd wear to church on Sunday, the fact that she secretly smoked cigarettes to the point that she was only caught with them on the day she died out of nowhere, the fact that my dad was around the same age his dad was when he passed away. So by the time I get to Reverend Dr. Louis Gates, I'm a little guarded. At this point, I've seen him all over the camp. Healing at Sunday services, giving spirit messages, and teaching the table tipping class I took. He's a third-generation medium, so he knows American spiritualism probably better than almost anyone practicing in the country. When he opens the door to greet me, he just starts. The second he opens the door, I enter the house he practices in with his wife, Marie Gates, and he guides me right inside, wastes no time. He's got a ton of energy, and he's recording the whole thing on this CD-ROM recorder, which I wasn't even aware was a thing that existed. But that means you can hear it, too.
If I'm not looking at you, I'm not ignoring you. I know you're there. I just watch what you're doing. So if I'm looking over there, somewhere else, I'm not ignoring you. I know you're there.
Okay.
I've already done like four readings this morning, so I'm a little wired.
And yeah, he's a little wired. I've never heard so many ideas channeled and thrown out there from a medium so quickly. In what seems to be this effortless motion that felt kind of jarring and kind of cool. Not everything resonated or made sense to me. In fact, listening back to this, even less made sense to me than I thought did in the moment.
but some of it felt true and resonant. You're just kind of pelted with information and ideas, and even if something isn't making sense to you as he looks past your head to the wooden floorboards to describe something like this.
I have a gentleman sitting over there on the floor, but I haven't figured out what he's doing yet. But I feel like his passing was extremely sudden, extremely quick when he passed. It would have been a quick passing, but I feel like he was quite sick. He was sick, he says. His body was giving up on him.
You barely have time to register it before he's moved on to something else, in which he, and I'm paraphrasing, low-key says he'll never get married. He says this a lot.
If you're married, I don't see it. You're on the path behind yourself.
Okay. Also, he says I don't belong in Florida.
I have no business in the state of Florida. I'm not going to kick you out. I have no business here. Do you live here?
Mm-mm.
Oh, thank God.
It's interesting because the Reverend Doctor is going back and forth between psychic abilities and mediumship abilities here. As I've been told by Pastor, not Pastor Deb before, all mediums are psychics, but not all psychics are mediums. Psychic work, as I understand it, is more of the prediction of the future, reading your energy, talking about the fact that you're never going to get married. Mediumship is the guy sitting on the floor who died suddenly. Not channeling something from the generalized universe, but a message from a specific individual spirit. Both of these practices line up cleanly with themes that spiritualists have followed forever. Themes of self-improvement, general optimism, the golden rule, and comforting messages from this group of spirits that are meant to be your guides through life. And spiritualists have always used this very American individualist idea that it's not just about hearing from the dead, it's about hearing from your dead, personality and all. During my time with Lewis, he throws a lot out there. There's a guy named Don following me around. There's a lady named Helen following me around. There's several archangels.
You have the Archangel Michael with you. You have different people in your vibration. You have a gentleman, two of them sitting over there now.
Yeah, you heard that. We have two guys in the room.
You have a guy in your vibration. You have a guy in your vibration named Don. Guide for you. Guide for you. It's fallen through lifetimes. Definite guide for you. Have your Archangel Michael with you. Raphael. Mm-hmm. Two archangels. You are real.
Two guys in the room. He keeps throwing stuff out there, and he doesn't seem to care or notice if it hurts my feelings.
You're not looking to do comedy work for the rest of your life. You're not Molly Homemaker. You are not Florence Nightingale. They need to know that. And people need to know that. I am not that.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people, some things in your life, it's not your circus, not your monkey, but you shouldn't be on a first-name basis with the clowns. There's about a mid-sized dog sitting underneath your chair. Mm. Kept walking in here, sitting underneath your chair.
It's information, information, information. My spirit guides want me to buy a comedy club. There's a woman in my vibration who says I swear too much. Someone's putting the Star of David necklace on me. Am I Jewish? No, I'm not Jewish. Well, they put that necklace on me. This is the Casadega way. The skeptics will tell you that this is a combination of hot and cold reading tactics. Hot readings being a technique where a medium uses what they could know about you before you enter the room. In my case, it's not hard to learn that I am a comedian, for example. And cold reading techniques, where no previous information is known and the psychic or medium throws a lot of stuff at the wall and either backs off or goes in further on one detail, depending on the physical or verbal affirmations the sitter gives them. And sure, that all makes sense, but when a piece of information hits from a medium, any of that logic goes completely out the window. In those moments, it's all real. And I mean that, no matter how much you know, no matter how many times the Reverend Doctor tells you, you're never gonna get married.
I don't feel like you're gonna meet your soul partner, like soulmate. Well, you meet somebody to walk the path with you, and that's all you're really looking for.
When it hits, when there's no explaining it, no amount of conventional logic is going to talk someone who believes in it out of it, even a little. And this phenomenon of belief had a huge effect on the final days of the Fox sisters. So let's check in with them.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz.
In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
The last 25 years of the Fox sisters' lives is at times baffling and other times tragic. While interest in spiritualism continued to rise in the U.S., especially when the absurdly high number of Civil War casualties starting in 1861 created this understandably increased interest in speaking with the dead, Maggie and Kate, in particular, began to suffer more and more. Spiritualists in the U.S. at this time generally accepted Abraham Lincoln's leadership, but because the religion was popularized by Rochester abolitionists, spiritualism waned in popularity in the American South during the war. But in the North, it surged in a major way. Spiritualist papers really pushed supporters of their religion to enlist in support of the Union. Spiritualist historian Emma Hardinge wrote, quote, "Spiritualists' total unconcern on the subject of death made them the bravest of soldiers," unquote. The Spiritualists also got their second First Lady supporter. After losing her 11-year-old son Willie to typhoid fever in 1862, First Lady Mary Todd Lincoln became the latest White House resident to engage with spiritualism and was said to have held as many as 8 seances in the White House. Her interest in spiritualism and spirit photography, a physical spirit manifestation that shows you your dead in ghost form in a compact souvenir pic, continued after her husband's assassination. As the war continued in 1864, one of the most significant moments in the attempts to organize American spiritualists took place at their first national convention in Chicago. There had been some previous attempts throughout the 1850s, but as with all things spiritualists, and I'll say it, most leftist groups in general, they were plagued with an inability to agree on anything, and their inherent resistance to declaring leadership and hardline rules made it very difficult to all get on the same page, which stagnated growth. The Fox sisters did not attend this first national convention, but the spiritualists did manage to unify on one issue: rehabilitating the image of their religion from allegations of fraud. A statement from the convention read this:
"American spiritualism means something more than table tipping and trumpet blowing, trance speaking and sigh-seeing. That the highest conditions it imposes are not abnormal states of beatified unconsciousness, but a vigorous, healthful, working state for the practical attainment of physical and spiritual freedom, purity, and growth."
In the 1860s, 20-something Kate was now the only sister who practiced in public. She was still innovating seance techniques and was now working in automatic writing, a process that involved transcribing messages with her left hand in reverse script while verbally channeling as normal. It's around this time in the 1860s through the early 20th century that public demand for more theatrical manifestations of spirit came into practice. Other examples included full body manifestations, something that Kate was said to do for a wealthy banker client who had lost his wife. Again, this brings up simultaneous questions of whether Kate was responding to public pressure for larger physical manifestations, or, as spirits are often accused of, if she was exploiting the grief of a wealthy man by claiming that she could physically make his dead return. Hoo boy! By the end of the Civil War, more Americans were killed than in World Wars I and II combined. President Lincoln was assassinated, and the extremely fraught period of Reconstruction in the U.S. began. According to Emma Hardinge, the war resulted in 2 million additional spiritualist converts, a huge moment for the religion, although there was no guarantee that the movement would continue to align with the times. It was around this time that both of the Fox sisters' parents, John and Margaret, passed away, further fracturing the sisters' relationship. And the loss of her mother drove Kate Fox to begin drinking to excess. Her sister Maggie was already too sick to help her, and eldest sister Leah strategically kept her distance. Interesting sidebar here. In an attempt to intervene with Kate's alcoholism, a doctor friend arranged to have her be checked into the facility of one Dr. George Taylor, an American who would go on to invent something called the Manipulator in 1869. Essentially, a huge machine designed to make women come. I'm not kidding, it's a big old vibrator. The attitudes towards the Victorian vagina was both misogynist in the expected way and kind of roundabout progressive by mistake. In a society known for litigating the bodies of marginalized people, the post-Civil War era saw women like Kate, those with some of the most privilege in the nation, diagnosed with hysteria. Now, we're all familiar with that, but one of the proposed cures for hysteria was, quote, pelvic massage to hysterical paroxysm. Coming. So deviant behavior from the owners of Victorian vaginas could be cured by coming. Although, of course, the procedures didn't make it sound as if this had anything to do with pleasure in a culture that famously assumed that pussy shan't squirt without the guidance of good dick, and was predicated on the idea that women were emotionally and intellectually inferior, thus hysteria. There were doctors whose job it was to make you come. That's just history. Dr. Rachel Maines, a sex historian and the author of The Technology of Orgasm, said this of the good Dr. George Taylor.
Dr. Taylor advised colleagues that women would tend to want more treatment than they really needed. They would overdo it if you let them.
Ugh! These scamps, these freaks, they're coming all over town. Hide your children. Kate Fox's time with Dr. Taylor was, by all accounts, really fun for her. He'd pioneered something called the Swedish Movement Cure, which encouraged regular vibrator stuff, along with exercise, massage, an all-vegetarian diet. And this worked for her for some time. But of course, it couldn't cure her financial issues or her addiction. Kate would occasionally disappear for weeks at a time to conduct seances for the Nouveau Riche of New York City, often being bribed with alcohol and going on week-long benders. Eventually, Dr. Taylor and his wife Sarah decided to protect Kate by allowing her to stay at their facility free of charge in exchange for some quid pro quo seances, once again meaning that Kate Fox was paying her rent by keeping a couple in touch with their dead children. Harriet Beecher Stowe, author of Tom's Cabin, was also a patient of Dr. Taylor's and attended seances where Kate continued to manifest more and more physical manifestations. Disembodied hands, twinkling lights, spirit portraits, likely influenced by early spirit photography. Still struggling with addiction, Kate would sometimes channel medium's messages that seemed to be directed at herself. Here's an example.
Now go and rejoice, Katie, and live. There are two paths, one happiness and peace, one misery and death. Choose the former, and great will be your golden reward.
By 1871, Spirit had Kate inform the Taylors that it was time for their medium in residence to go abroad, via a popular spirit that Kate Wood channel named Benjamin Franklin. I'm serious. You might remember from a few episodes ago that I was kind of jarred when finding out a present-day Casadega medium considered J.P. Morgan to be one of his spirit guides. But there is weirdly precedent for that kind of thing.
American and English spiritualists would often channel historical figures like this. That is, ones highly glorified in their culture at the time, who are deeply entrenched in these colonial and imperialist myths.
It's yet another example of the spiritualist movement being generally progressive, but still majority composed of middle-class white Americans who were frequently tone-deaf and self-centered, a major reason that the religion has not diversified much today, and why, as we'll discuss next week, Black and brown spiritualists felt ostracized from the movement and would go on to form their own churches and customs. The Taylors weren't thrilled to see the prone-to-relapsing Kate leave, but she was now in her mid-30s, and there wasn't much they could do. She left for England in late 1871 and was thrilled to see that spiritualism had taken off in England significantly. By this time, England had produced a number of legendary mediums since the religion was brought to the country in the early 1850s. There was D.D. Holm, who I've mentioned on Ghost Church before, who was known as one of the least debunked mediums of the time, although skepticism ran rampant there as well. My favorite example is a Victorian writer power couple, Robert and Elizabeth Barrett Browning, went to one of Holm's seances in England once, intriguing Elizabeth, but prompting Robert to write a brutal takedown poem called Mr. Sludge the Medium.
Look at me. See, I kneel. The only time I swear I ever cheated. Yes, by the soul of her who hears, your sainted mother, sir. All except this last accident was truth.
It's really long. It's like this Victorian diss track. It's good. D.D. Holm was also notable for allegedly introducing spiritualism to a Russian woman named Helena Blavatsky in the late 1850s, who spent a lot of time defending spiritualism for years, but was off-put by their fraud allegations. Eventually, using a number of ideas she'd learned via her travels in Tibet, India, and all across the East, she brought concepts like karma and reincarnation into existing spiritualist rhetoric and founded her own movement, Theosophy, in 1875, a movement that was also plagued by accusations of fraud. Queen Victoria was rumored to have either attended or maybe even held spiritualist seances after the death of her husband, Prince Albert, in 1861. So it was an even bigger boon to the English spiritualist movement when the Kate Fox married an Englishman. Now 35 years old, she met a widower named Henry Dietrich Jenkin, who didn't just believe in spiritualism, so did his parents. She had two kids with him, Ferdinand in England and Henry Jr. while visiting her sisters in New York, and her happy married life and ability to continue practicing her religion kept Kate on the wagon for a long time. But as always, things remained needlessly chaotic in America. In 1872, there were two spiritualist-adjacent failed presidential campaigns. Longtime Fox family friend Horace Greeley, who Kate had spent the summer getting an education from when she was just a kid, had failed in his presidential bid against Ulysses S. Grant and died shortly after in a sanitarium. More interestingly, many American spiritualists were embarrassed when a medium named Victoria Woodhull became the first woman to ever campaign for the American presidency. Her campaign is considered to be pretty historic now, but was treated like a joke in its day. Woodhull had worked as a women's rights advocate for years. She'd been pro-abolition. She had been a pusher of the concept of free love, which at this time only meant the right to get married, divorced, or have children without social restriction. And then there were some eccentric things. She listed Frederick Douglass as her running mate, which I guess she never told him about. All this to say, the spiritualist did not claim her, and her public presence was considered to be an embarrassment to the movement. Because, sure, ghosts are real, but a woman for president? I'm going to be sick. I have to go get on that big scary vibrator again. By the mid-1870s, Kate and Maggie's relationship with their older sister Leah hadn't improved very much. Kate wrote in a letter to fellow medium Dee Dee Holm that,
"My sister, Mrs. Underhill, who was more than 23 years older than myself, was always jealous of me. And when my blessed mother died, we were not on speaking terms."
But she was working on forgiveness, explaining that,
"At times I find the shadows of her unkindness lingering in my heart. I try to remember that she is a changed woman and a good woman."
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
While the Foxes continued to split hairs, loosely organized spiritualist camps began to pop up all over the country, including a camp of hundreds of tents in Lake Pleasant, Massachusetts, as well as the Casadega Lake Free Association in upstate New York in 1879. Don't be confused. This is not the same Casadega that I visited this year in Florida. This is a sister camp that was later named Lilydale in 1906. Lilydale is still considered to be the most influential spiritualist camp in the country, spanning over 80 acres and briefly being the site where the Fox Sisters' cabin was relocated. Of course, like all notable spiritualist buildings, it burned down under mysterious circumstances. In 1881, Kate's husband died after they had a decade of a happy marriage and two kids, and Kate almost immediately falls off the wagon and begins drinking again. She traveled to Russia briefly after being invited by a bureaucrat and is said to have held seances for the royal family, but those times didn't last very long. 1884 brought another round of prominent mediums down with a study called the Siebert Commission. It was an academic study funded with money left behind by spiritualist Henry Siebert to confirm the phenomena of the religion he dedicated his life to. Conducted at the University of Pennsylvania, Maggie met with them, and while her mediumship wasn't disproven, doubt was once again cast on how the fox spirit wrappings were made, as well as on other physical phenomena like spirit photography and automatic writing. The sisters were thrown into conflict again when Leah published her heavily editorialized memoirs called The Missing Link in Modern Spiritualism in 1885, which Maggie and Kate did not like, particularly because they were struggling financially and with alcohol as their older sister lived this comfortable, wealthy life. In 1888, everything comes crashing down. That May, Kate Fox was arrested and held for $300 in the Harlem police court on child neglect charges. When the police showed up, the boys were fine and healthy, but Kate was, in fact, drunk, and the boys, who were 14 and 12, were sent to a juvenile asylum. Once released, Kate was devastated and embarrassed, admitting to having, quote, intemperate habits, end quote, but strongly denied that this had affected her parenting. And the impact that this arrest had extended beyond the personal. For other prominent spiritualists, Kate's arrest was an embarrassment that further estranged the religion's creators from the religion itself. Maggie was able to get her nephews out of the juvenile asylum by sending a cable posing as Kate's brother-in-law, Edward Jenkin, reuniting Kate with the boys. But that was only the beginning. At this point, Maggie and Kate Fox had been synonymous with spiritualism for 40 years, beginning when they were about the same age as Kate's sons. Spiritualism had changed their lives completely, for better and for worse. They had become some of the most prominent women serving as religious figures in the world, but had become so at the expense of their privacy, their youth, and the majority of their personal relationships. They were predisposed to alcoholism via their dad, but these issues were exacerbated by the stress and pressure of constant investigations, and their status at different times in life as unmarried or widowed women definitely did not help. By this time, Maggie had returned to occasionally conducting seances for financial purposes while maintaining that she was technically a Catholic. Okay, messy. But 40 years on, the world still wondered. Did they really believe in what they had spent their lives doing? In 1888, Maggie Fox published an answer via a column in the New York Herald called The Curse of Spiritualism, in which she said that it was all a lie. She explained that she and Kate had been reassured by Leah as children that their fraudulence was okay and in service of something greater. That spirit communication was real, and that she'd proved it by having spirit wrappings that Leah herself produced assure her younger sisters that they were doing the right thing. Per Maggie, Leah had exploited a prank that they'd played as bored kids, convinced them it was real, and spun it out into a religion that had made her rich and respected, while her kids' sisters remained deceived and increasingly destitute. Maggie takes pot shots at a lot of people in this column, particularly Leah, but also the general public who were enthusiastic about spiritualism. She indicates that she felt the public pressured mediums into fraudulence with increasingly ridiculous demands. From her column,
"Spiritualism is a curse. God has set his seal against it. I call it a curse, for the vilest miscreants make use of it to cloak their evil doings. Fanatics ignore the wrappings, which is the only part of the phenomena that is worthy of notice, and rush madly after the glaring humbugs that flood New York."
Of Leah, Maggie indicated that she felt it was Leah who had gotten Kate arrested in the first place. When she was interviewed in a follow-up by the Tribune in September 1888, she went in.
"We were but innocent little children. What did we know? Ah, we get to know too much. Our sister used us in her exhibitions, and we made money for her. Now she turns upon us because she's the wife of a rich man, and she opposes us both wherever she can. Oh, I am after her. You can kill sometimes without using weapons, you know."
When asked how the Foxes had produced the wrappings all these years, Maggie promised she would show the world at an upcoming lecture. And what gets me the most out of this whole story is Maggie saying that she never believed that her older sister was lying to her about spirit communication being real until her own husband died and never came back to talk to her. Maggie continues,
"Why, I have explored the unknown as far as human will can. I have gone to the dead so that I might get from them some little token. Nothing came of it. Nothing. Nothing."
Kate fully supported Maggie, saying that the majority of Leah's book was fiction. And at a public showing in October 1888, Maggie showed the world how she and Kate had been producing the wrappings all these years, confirming a lot of speculation from the past four decades. She says,
"At night when we went to bed, we used to tie an apple on a string and move the string up and down, causing the apple to bump on the floor. Or we would drop the apple on the floor, making a strange noise every time it would rebound."
As people had been speculating since the early 1850s, Maggie said the wraps were produced with their knuckles and joints, fingers, toes,
knees. Oh my God, that's so gross. These women's knees were just destroyed. They were for sure double jointed, but over time developed incredible control over the motions of their bodies. It's pretty fascinating and kind of grotesque to think about. It's not like athletic, but that kind of mastery of your own tiny bodily movements is just wild. Maggie said that no one ever caught on or mistrusted them when spiritualism began because they were just kids, and that they were
led on by my sister intentionally and by my mother unintentionally.
She called several physicians to the stage and showed them how she did it. She moved around her joints, and just as always, the spirit raps sounded around the auditorium. The news called it the death blow to spiritualism. Here were the two girls, now women, who had started everything, publicly stating that it had been a lie and they regretted it all. Spiritualism should have ended right there and then. But that's not really how believing in something works, is it? By this time, spiritualism was in some ways too big to fail. In addition to large followings in the US and Europe, a movement called Espiritismo, which we'll discuss next week, had combined with other spiritual traditions of enslaved African people in Brazil, Cuba, and Puerto Rico, to name a few. So spiritualists did what you might expect. Once again, discredit and smear the Fox sisters by any means necessary. Maggie was accused of disclaiming spirit for financial reasons, of being abandoned by spirit by lack of faith, that she wasn't even relevant enough to the movement for her opinion to matter, that Kate was just falling into line with her lie, just as she had fallen into line with Leah all those years. Prominent spiritualists turned on them as they continued to tour the JK Spiritualism is Fake lecture series. They stuck by this for a good year, but here's the part that's wildest of all. A year later, they took it back. Maggie apologized for ever having said that spiritualism was a lie, now saying that, quote,
"Would to God that I could undo the injustice I did the cause of spiritualism."
She said the Catholics had made her do it, and certainly not that the wealthy spiritualists had pressured her to recant her statements. Maggie implied that she would do another lecture tour. The JK Spiritualism is Fake lecture tour is fake lecture tour. It didn't work. Leah passed away peacefully at home in 1890 in her late 70s, the child abuse accusations never really affecting her. And in fact, the backlash against her younger sisters only elevated Leah's status among longtime spiritualists. Kate redacted all of her denials of her religion as well, and once again started doing seances for the Vibrator family, the Taylors, but would still disappear on drinking binges before passing away mid-binge at only 55 in July 1892. Shortly before she died, she channeled the spirit of Benjamin Franklin for the Taylors one last time, saying,
"There will be no loss. God bless you, now and forever."
Maggie was poor and living at a friend's apartment when she grew sick in 1893, dying in her sleep at 59. There was no money left, but a friend arranged for Maggie and Kate to be buried beside each other. And that's the story of the Fox sisters. They are tough cultural figures to parse. On one hand, I'll be honest, Leah Fox feels like a pretty standard girl boss of her era. A single mom in her 30s, barred from most lines of work and certainly most lines of power. She was a single woman who couldn't even vote. When her little sisters stumbled onto this local phenomenon, she saw an opportunity and exploited it to create space for herself that didn't exist. But Maggie and Kate Fox, that's a little harder. They were kids, and it's much harder to understand what they believed and what they didn't and for how long. To this day, people generally cast Maggie and Kate as knowing that their seances were a fraud the whole time. Here's a drunk history clip to that effect.
Spiritualism has taken off to that point. And so basically what Maggie Fox has done is made her and her sisters irrelevant. So after Maggie realizes that her life is nothing when she's not a medium, she just drank a bunch of booze till she died.
But
I don't know. I do believe that they were playing a prank on their parents that got way blown out of proportion. But I also believe that if your much older sister tells you something is true when you're a child, you will probably believe it. Faith has skull-fucked so many people, often because of what they internalize as true when they're very young. And if I were an 11-year-old told that not only did a prank I pulled on April Fool's Day have accidental religious significance, but that that significance made me a prophet that was going to help my family, I don't know. I mean, what would you do? I don't know what I'd do. And however far down the line, when you learn that things are not as you've been told, whenever that is, and it seems like Maggie and Kate had those moments throughout their lives, by that point, this deceit had determined every area of their life and stood to rob people of the comfort that they'd previously felt morally confident in giving. If Maggie or Kate truly knew that they were fraudulent, that's up for criticism, and it should be. In particular, I don't think that any grieving parent should be misled. But there's too much gray area for me here. I'm a grieving person doing way too much of this shit right now. I'm making a whole ass show about shades of gray and skepticism as it pertains to spiritualism. But I still went to a medium last week. And I don't know if I went for the truth, but I do know that I went for comfort. And I got that. And if that medium has a crisis of self 3 weeks from now and contacts me and says it was all a hoax, I would say I still got what I paid for. But I don't know. Everyone's different. Maggie and Kate Fox were not perfect baby angel religious prophets that they were often framed as, but I think they're worth empathizing with. Well, not so much on Leah for me. She lived till 80 off their backs as far as I'm concerned. Who cares? Faith is fucked up when you're a kid, and being lifted as a prophet while propping up your older sister's fraud probably doesn't help. By 1893, over 45 years after two sisters had heard rappings in Hydesville, the Fox sisters were gone, but spiritualism was just getting started. And just a year after that, the Casadega Lake Free Association decided it was time to open up a new camp that would stay open year-round in Central Florida. Speaking of which, let's see how the good Reverend Dr. Lewis lands this plane.
By September, October this year, I don't think you're in a relationship. I think you could be in a very extremely powerful friendship with somebody.
Yeah, he's still telling me that he doesn't think I'll ever be in love my entire life. But it's fine. We finish our session and I pay him $40 for 45 minutes. And for those not plugged into the going rate for mediumship, this is low, about half of what the other Casadega medium I visit charges. It's another way that Reverend Dr. Lewis is old school. Past generations of Casadega mediums never wanted to charge for their work at all, implying to do so would be to cheapen their gifts and make spiritualism less generally accessible. Today's mediums do charge, different rates, and a showing of respect for each other's labor, although it still is a controversial issue. As I'm heading out, I ask the Reverend Doctor what the rest of his day is like, and he tells me he has a session coming up this afternoon he needs to get ready for. It's a family of middle-aged siblings who are looking for buried treasure that a dead father said might be buried somewhere in their house. Delightful. So, no, of the three readings I have at Casadega, two of which from longtime certified mediums, nothing completely blew me away. And that's fine. For people who come here, that's a calculated risk you take, I think. I sought them out and not the other way around. Where the situation can get predatory is when mediums and psychics work with the police, for example, an issue we'll talk about in a future episode. That's a hard line. If a medium is seeking you to give false affirmative hope, run the other way. After I leave my reading with Reverend Dr. Lewis, I walk past the library, around the corner, past the shop where they charge $90 to talk to you behind a thin sheet, and back to my hotel room where there's no hot water. It's funny because I've walked around most of the camp at this point, around the parks, the fairy trail, the huge Floridian forest where there's a few marked bamboo poles that memorialize where either a hotel or a sanitarium burned down, depending on who you ask. And I've definitely been to the gas station. But one element of the camp always stands out, something that's visually and verbally referenced all the time, because it is a critical part of the founding myth of Casadega. And that is, the Indigenous Spirit Guide. But for all the talk of respecting and referencing Indigenous culture, this is not a history that's available in Casadega, any more than the tragic side of the Fox Sisters story is one that's ever referenced. So next week, we're going to tackle the next spiritualist myth, the tangled colonial mess, and we'll take a detour to the world of espiritismo, all that and more on next week's Ghost Church.
Ghost Church is a Cool Zone Media production created, written, and hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. The show is produced by Sophie Lichterman, edited by Ian Johnson. Our theme song is by Speedy Ortiz, that's Sadie Dupuy, Andy Moholt, Audrey Z. Whitesides, and Joey Dubek. And music is by Zoe Blade. Special thanks to guest voices this week, Ian Johnson, Sophie Lichterman, Shireen Lonnie Yunus, and Caitlin Durante.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh my, look at that, he is! And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win!
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.